All right, we are doing a lesson today on the tabernacle. And you should have a color drawing in front of you. It has two pages on it. Make sure you bring this Friday as well as Tuesday. And let me remind you the laydown of how things are going to go out. Today is Wednesday, so we're going to teach today, Thursday, and Friday, and then we're done. We step in on Tuesday to a test on the entire Exodus era. And we will not have a review. Because Monday we have chapel, and then Tuesday's test, and then Wednesday we have the holiday. So 3 days of lecturing, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then a test on the entire Exodus era on Tuesday. Now what document did I tell you to be sure to bring tomorrow? Yesterday, what did I tell you?
Don't miss all the
everything with the Ten Commandments. Right, everything with the Ten Commandments. Yes, buddy? One of these? Okay. Can you pass that back? Another hour today again, huh? Wow. What time do you get up in order to make this happen? Wow. Good. All right. So let's go to chapters 20, covenant 24. Yeah, let's go to 25. Yep, let's go to 25. Let's look at the first thing that we want to talk about. Is the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant. So let's look at your tabernacle tent. Here it is right here. And to make sure that you see, this is the Ark of the Covenant right here. Inside there. You see that it's in the Holy of Holies. The Ark of the Covenant. Make sure you notice the Ark of the Covenant. So they are going to make an Ark of the Covenant. Jacob, look at verse 10, please. Of chapter 25 and begin reading.
It shall make an ark of acacia wood, 2 cubits and a half shall be its length, 1.5 cubits its breadth, and 1.5 cubits its height. You shall overlay it with pure gold, inside and outside shall you overlay it, and you shall make on it a molding of gold around it. You shall cast 4 rings of gold for it and put them on its 4 feet, 2 rings on one side of it, and 2 rings on each another side of it. You shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. And you shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry the ark by them. The poles shall remain in the rings of the ark, they shall not be taken from it. And you shall put into the ark the testimony that I shall give you. You shall make a mercy seat of pure gold, 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and 1.5 cubits its breadth. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold, of hammered work shall you make them. On the 2 edges of the mercy seat, make 1 cherub on the one end, and another cherub on the other end. One of the one piece with the mercy seat shall you make the cherubim on its 2 ends. The cherubim shall spread out their wings above, overshadowing the mercy seat with their wings, their faces one to another, toward the mercy seat, shall the faces of the cherubim be. And you shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I shall give you.
Right, the testimony. What does he mean by the testimony?
The Ten Commandments.
Right, and it's more than just the Ten Commandments. Let's everyone remember that. It's written on both sides, and it's packed full of information. So it's not just like the Ten Commandments. All right, keep reading.
There I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubim there on the ark of the testimony.
Alright, so what is God going to do inside that Holy of Holies?
He's going to meet them.
He's going to meet with them there. So who is it that can go into the Holy of Holies?
High priest.
And that's one person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who is it presently?
Aaron.
It's going to be Aaron, right. Okay, it's going to be Aaron. Okay, so I got a couple color drawings just to give you some visual ideas here. I'll show them to you here. Okay, just to give you a sense of how real this is. Now, know that it's thousands of years ago, and we really begin to forget that this is a legitimate event and a legitimate thing. But remember now, these men are tasked to do this every single day. Every day, offerings are being presented to the Lord inside here. Now, who are these men?
Priests.
Right, but where? What tribe?
Levites.
Right, these are the Levites. And now anytime we move, this whole thing is going to be packed up. Every bit of it is going to be packed up. Every bit of this is going to be packed up. When we move to a new location, the whole thing is going to be set up again. This is incredibly portable. This is very portable. Let me get another picture here. That's the outside courtyard. This is where the offerings, the burnt offerings, are put, and they're going to be burnt up in here. You can see the amount of wood that would be necessary, the amount of sacrifices that would be offered on a regular basis here. Here is the bronze laver. This is where they're going to wash their hands. Okay, again, this is all part of this amazing ritual that's going to set Israel apart from everybody else. All right, this is a really cool, by the way, this is the Rose Guide to the Tabernacle I'm showing you. Rose Publishing, for those that are listening on the internet. But check out this whole concept, and I'm going to flip these transparencies for you. It's pretty cool. Pastor Bill gave this to me. It's a great resource. Notice how these are actually layers. And we'll see in the scripture in a minute, but look at these cool layers here. So what they're doing is they're going to make this wooden structure. Here's the wooden structure now. Check it out. They're going to make this giant wooden structure, and just like you when you went tenting before or camping before and you set up a tent, sometimes you'll have tents that'll have like a frame and then the cloth, and then they'll actually have like a zip tie above it, like 18 inches above it. Anybody see what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? Well, that's this whole concept right here. It's layers and layers and layers here. And so imagine the crew of workers that it would take to set this massive structure up and then get the tarp completely. And that tarp, I'm using that word, it's really not the right word. And then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So the Ark of the Covenant is inside the Holy of Holies. Now, what's the purpose of those poles that we sing on here? Here's a picture again from the ESV. It's the carrier, right? And what happens when you touch this bad boy?
You die.
You die. Remember that? There's a story with regard to King David. And the ox was pulling it, and that thing started to slip off the cart. In order to keep it from slipping off the cart, what did they do?
He grabbed it.
Yeah, and what happened to him?
He died. Struck dead.
He died instantly, which is mind-boggling. But that's to show the holiness of this thing. All right, and I can tell you're bored already. I'm doing my very best. I got it. It's detailed. Let's go on to the next thing, the table for bread. Is that where we're at?
Yes, sir.
All right. Kyrie, read about the first four verses of that.
Sir, I'm sorry.
Verse 23, chapter number 25. Okay. Chapter 25, verse 23.
Thou shalt also make a table of shittim wood. 2 cubits shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit shall the breadth thereof, and 1 cubit shall... Yeah, half the height.
By the way, how big is a cubit? Anybody have any ideas?
Elbow to your fingertips.
Yeah, it's about like this. Yep, okay, keep reading. Overlay it with gold.
And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold, and make thereto a crown of gold round about. And there shall make it unto a border of an handbreadth round about, and thou shalt make a golden crown to the border thereof round about. And thou shalt make it 4 rings of gold, and put these rings in the 4 corners that are on the 4 feet thereof. Over against the border shall the rings be 4 places of the staves to bear the table.
All right. Okay, good. That's enough. You got the idea. Here's another picture for you. I'll show you this one. This is out of the ESV Study Bible. This is why I'm hoping that Santa Claus will bring some of you an ESV Study Bible. Make sure you send it to the North Pole so that he can get it. Ha ha ha. No, not even a ha ha ha.
Ha ha ha. Ha.
Nothing.
I do.
Wow. Okay.
I'm crying on the
Yeah, you're supposed to laugh at that. Just something.
I'm just dying.
Just placate the old man, okay? He thinks he's funny. Laugh at the old man, and then in the hallway talk about me. It's fine. Okay?
All right,
so we've got the Ark of the Covenant here. Inside the Ark of the Covenant is what? What's inside there?
The Ten Commandments.
The tablets. The tablets that were written by God. Then we've got this table of showbread right here. And now we're going on to the golden lamp. Yes, buddy?
Has anyone ever found the Ark of the Covenant?
No. Indiana Jones is still looking for it. Okay?
I got that one.
Okay. All right, so now we're looking at the golden lampstand. All right, next. Miles, start reading where it talks about the golden lampstand. Verse number 21. 31.
Okay. And thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold. A beam work shall the candlestick be made. His shaft and his branches, his bowels, his knops, and his flowers shall be of the same. and 6 branches shall come out of the sides of it, 3 branches of the candlestick out of one side, and 3 branches of the candlestick out of the other side. 3 bowls made like unto almonds, with a knop and a flower in one branch, and 3 bowls made like almonds in the other branch, with a knop and a flower sewn in the six branches that come out of the candlestick. And in the candlestick shall be 4 bowls made like unto almonds, with their knops and their flowers. And there shall be a knop under 2 branches of the same, and a knop under 2 branches of the same, and a knop under 2 branches of the same, according to the 6 branches that proceed out of the candlestick.
All right, good. So again, I'm just showing you the detail and where it's found. That's all we're doing right now. Let's move to the tabernacle, chapter number 26. Moreover, you're going to make a tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, blue and purple and scarlet yarns. I'm reading in verse 1-26. You're going to make them with cherubim, skilled workers into them. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits. The breadth of each curtain, so the width is going to be 4 cubits. All the curtains shall be the same size. 5 curtains shall be coupled one to another. The other 5 curtains shall be coupled one to another. I mean, the detail is amazing that's communicated here. And then you go through the rest of the chapter, and it's nothing but all the details that allow us to then reconstruct a picture like this. Because let me remind you, obviously there was no cameras back then. So every bit of this is being reconstructed from reading the biblical text. This is somebody's imagination from the words in the biblical text. Yes, buddy?
Back with the candlestick. I'm sorry, what the heck is a knob?
I don't know.
He was saying knob.
It says knob, though.
N-K-N-O-B.
Right.
Hang it up.
Mine
it's
says
just a Hebrew
knob.
Word. It's just a Hebrew word that communicates some type of a flower or a bud or something. Okay? It's obviously something that would be very clear to who? Who would it be very clear to?
The Israelites.
To the people that received it in the Hebrew. So he's going to use language that would be common to them. You know, so if it was today, he would be describing flowers and anything that would be very common to you, and you would know exactly what it's there. Why are we having struggles with this? Yeah, we weren't there. We weren't there. We don't know Hebrew, and we weren't there 3,000 years ago. But obviously to them it was sufficient. All right, now let's go on to the next thing, which is going to be the bronze altar in verse 20, chapter 27. And Katie, why don't you pick up and read about first 5 or 6 verses.
Verse 37.
Right here, this Katie right here.
27.
No, 27 verse 1.
And thou shalt make an altar of shittim wood, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits broad, and it shall be 4 square, and the height thereof shall be 3 cubits. And thou shalt make the horns of it upon the 4 corners thereof, its horns shall be of the same, and thou shalt overlay it with brass. And thou shalt make his pans to receive his ashes, and his shovels and his basins, and his flesh hooks and his fire pans. All the vessels thereof thou shalt make of brass.
All right, stop. What are we using these vessels for, these utensils? What's this all about? What's happening on this thing? What's happening on this thing? Let's just look at me and let's visualize this thing. It's a giant square, right? And it's going to have a collection box for what?
Ashes.
For the ashes, exactly. And what are we going to put on there?
Burnt offerings.
Yeah, we're going to put wood on there. And the wood's going to create what?
Fire.
And then we're going to put a goat or a lamb on there. And what are we going to do to the whole thing? Just burn the whole thing up. Every bit is going to be burned up. And what's going to be underneath there?
The ashes.
And what are we going to use the utensils for?
Poking, making the fire keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, how many of you have a wood fireplace in your house? Okay, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. What do you have to do? Sometimes you have to get in there, poke it, move a log around, keep that thing going. So every single instrument that they're going to need to keep this thing happening is being prescribed in detail. Now remember, this is the outer court. Look at the picture here. This is the outer court. Here's a great one in the front cover. Now all the time, things are being offered to the Lord. So anytime you look over there to that thing, wherever you're at, remember they're camping all around here. You look over and you see smoke coming up. What do you know?
There's a sacrifice.
Yeah, we're offering to the Lord. Another offering is being made to the Lord. It's a continual reminder of Israel's relationship to the Lord, that God is pleased, that God is accepting the offerings of the people, that they were offering another sacrifice to the Lord to appease His anger towards our sin and to establish the right relationship that we desire to have with Him. So the rest of these verses all describe the detail of this thing. All right, let's go to the court of the tabernacle. Sal, would you pick up in verse 9?
Where is it again?
Chapter number 27, verse 9.
Okay. Thou shalt make the court of the tabernacle for the south side southward. There shall be hangings for the court of fine twined linen of 100 cubits long for one side. And the 20 pillars thereof and their 20 sockets shall be of brass, the hooks of the pillars and their fillets shall be of silver. And likewise for the north side in length there shall be hangings of 100 cubits long, and his 20 pillars and their 20 sockets of brass, the hooks of the pillars and their fillets of silver.
All right, so let's do the math for just a minute. We're not going to do all the math, but let's take that first number. How long was it? How many cubits? Mr. Davis, what does it say? The longest part? 100 or 120? Which one does it say? 100?
Yeah.
Okay, so 100, and it was how many cubits?
100 cubits.
100 cubits, okay, very good. And a cubit, we said, is what?
18 inches
or 1.5 feet. Very good, 1.5 feet. I don't know where you're going with meters. Okay, so that means that it's going to be 150 feet in length. Have we got it? Now, what's he describing right now? He's describing... This is what's being described.
The court of the tabernacle.
Yeah, this right here. See this outer thing right here? That's the outside wall. Yeah, right on your thing. Exactly. Thank you. That outer fence. Can I use that word, fence? Look at it on your drawing. That's it. That's the curtain. That's the fence. That's the wall. That's going to be constructed. And why is that wall there? Why is that wall there?
To prevent the people from outside coming in.
Women.
Yeah, women is one, but who else?
Gentiles.
Yeah, Gentiles, but who else?
Non-Levites.
Non-Levites, exactly. In order to come into here, you have to be
a Levite.
To be a Levite. Okay? It is a privilege to be a Levite. There's no doubt it is a privilege to be the Levite. So the rest of this entire description in 27 is all about the tabernacle, the court. All right, 28. What is going to be described in 28?
Priest's garments.
The priest's garments. So let's look at, there's one picture on your handout. It's got a pretty good picture of the priest. Check it out right now. You see it there? Now this guy, everything about his garments, everything, it's this one right here. Right here. This one right here. Everything is exactly prescribed. The color. I mean, this would be like God saying, you're going to wear a Brooks Brothers navy blue two-button worsted wool, slightly tailored suit. You'll have a black leather 2-inch silver-tipped buckle. That's the level of detail here. You're going to wear a white button-down shirt with 100% linen. The tie will have three colors in a diagonal stripe. That's the kind of prescribed detail is being communicated from God to them concerning whose garments?
Priests.
What? Which one?
High priest.
The high priest. This is one. I want you to think right now, why does God go into all this detail about the high priest? Why is he doing this? What is his purpose behind creating this amazingly specific information about the high priest? To set the high priest apart. All right. Why does God, what is in his intent about setting the high priest apart? Why in the world is he setting the high priest apart with this? Because obviously when you walk around with that garb on, everybody's going to notice you. I mean, you're going to stand out. I mean, you're... in the mall, and everybody is doing a double ticket when you're walking through with this garb on. Ty.
Because if the high priest would be talking to him, he wants him to at least look good.
He wants him to at least look good, right? So he's got his Air Jordans on, and he's going to look good. Okay. No, that's not quite what I meant. But anyway, go ahead. Does anyone else have an idea? Why does God go into all this detail about the high priest? Awkward silence. I guess I'll just cut this out. Yes, JJ.
To differ from the other priests and the
I can have the priest look special. And then.
Right, but why is he wanting to make the high priest special?
That silver's going to go into the...
Yes.
It's like the same reason why highly decorated officers have so many different awards.
Right, but why? Why is he trying to make the...
To establish their predominance.
Okay, quality. But why is he trying to establish the predominance of the high priest?
So they can pay respect to
him. Okay, but why is he trying to pay respects to the high priest?
People will...
All right. He's the high priest is the one that intercedes on behalf of the Israelites. You're on the right track. Why is that a big deal, Mr. Norton?
God wants him to look his best.
Yeah. Okay. He wants him to look his best. Okay. You're all answering the same thing. You're still not there. Think with me. Why are we going here?
He's like the gate from the people to God.
Okay. To make a comparison to whom?
To the person.
Exactly. This is all being set up to lead us to whom?
Christ.
To Christ, who is the ultimate what?
Sacrifice.
The ultimate high priest. Christ is the ultimate high priest. The writer of Hebrews is going to tell us in a very bizarre way, listen to me, this is a weird thing, that when Christ died, blood was applied to the mercy seat. But not this mercy seat. The mercy seat in heaven. All of this, everything here, the tabernacle, the mercy seat, the altars, the lamp, the bread, all of this was done for one purpose, to point to whom?
Christ.
To point to Christ. So he's the bread of life and there's a table of bread. He is the light of the world, and there's a golden lampstand. He is the ultimate mercy seat. His blood atones on the mercy seat. All these little details, all this amazing, intricate stuff is all being done, all of it, to point to Christ. Take your Bibles and go to John chapter 1. Hold on to the tabernacle idea in your mind and go to John chapter 1. Now, the tabernacle is where God dwelt with his people. The tabernacle is where God dwelt with his people. It's where the high priest met with God. It's the sign that this is God's house, or this is where God dwells. So now, look at John chapter number 1. You get a pen out. All right, you know John 1, hopefully. In the beginning was the
Word.
And the Word was
God.
Yeah, and the Word was God. Okay? So who is this Word? And now we look all the way down to verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Dwelt among us. Do you see that word dwelt? D-W-E-L-T. It's literally... Tabernacled. He tabernacled. Find that word. Get your pen out on the margin of your Bible. The most literal rendering would be that God tabernacled. And what is the point here now? Why this unique reference to the tabernacle, that he's tabernacling. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, tabernacled among us. What is the point of that phrase? Anyone, what is the point of that idea? Anyone? Any thoughts? All right, so we have in the Old Testament... The first thing we have over here is the actual tabernacle that I showed you on your color drawing. David becomes the king, and what's David want to do?
Build a temple.
He wants to build a temple. For whom?
God.
For God. That's right. David says, King David, man, I got this massive house, 18 bathrooms, 32 master bedrooms. This is great rooms, theaters, and God, you're still dwelling in a what?
Tabernacle.
In a tabernacle, a tent. So think about it like this. Think about it like this idea. You got this massive house that you're living in, and there's a tent on the side of the house. And you show up at your house, JJ. Who lives there? That's my mom and dad live there. What are you kidding me? You live in this beautiful house, a swimming pool, and indoor gymnasium, and you got, you know, a half court basketball to work on your shot in there. And I mean, it's a beautiful house, and you got this little shack over here. It's a, you know, cool kind of a tent. You know, that's where my mom and dad stay. And you can't find any place in here. No, that's for them. So that's what David's perspective was. David's perspective was, I live in this awesome house. Not nomad anymore. I got a house, a structure. And where's God living?
A tent.
He's still in the tabernacle. He's still in the tents. So David says, I want to make you a what?
A house.
A house. And what's God tell David?
No.
Why?
He has twitched blood in his hands.
That's right. He's a warrior. He's a beast. Underneath the boards, you crash. Not a rebound. He's going to get them all. You talk about boxing out, he's the master at boxing out. I'm trying to work on him. You know what I mean? Beast. So he can't do it. So who gets to do it?
Solomon
does, right? Solomon gets to do it. Now, what kind of a house does God make for Solomon? I mean, does Solomon make for God? What kind of house?
Awesome. Beautiful.
How beautiful? Anybody remember some of the ways that we could describe how awesome this is?
Gold bricks.
Yep.
Yeah, it was all inlaid with gold. All the furniture in there was gold too.
The thing was amazing. It was so amazing that the Queen of Sheba visits just to check it out. She comes all the way from Egypt to check it out. I mean, Solomon pulls out all the stops, the best wood that can be found, imported ceramic tile from Italy, hanging chandeliers. I mean, he this is going to be God's house. So they spend millions of dollars. I'm not exaggerating. I'm saying that the equivalent idea, that's what I'm trying to communicate to you, that the amount of natural resources that were put in there, if you had constructed today, it would be this amazing facility. Why is Solomon doing all this?
Because God needs to have the most grand house.
That's right. God's got to have, if this is the God of Israel, how are you going to communicate how important God is? This is his house. You got a little tent over here. What's that say? Must not be very important. So God occupies the tabernacle. He fills it with his presence. How long does that tabernacle stay for? Does it stay a long time? I mean, is it still there today?
No.
No, it doesn't. 586 BC, you'll learn this day, but 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar comes in, and just destroys that thing. Mm-hmm. Destroys it. Utterly destroys it. And for 70 years, it lays in desolate. It's just utterly not used. Then they go back in and they try to rebuild it. And they cannot. They don't have the resources to bring it back to the glory days. So they got this little tabernacle. So not much of anything. A little temple. And not a big deal. And then Jesus shows up and says, I'm tabernacling among you. What is the point there? I'm tabernacling among you. Yeah, he's not in that temple. Where's he at? Where's God at? Walking among you. God's doing what? Walking among you. What? Wait a minute. Before, what was there separating the people from God? Not just the veil. That's for the Levites.
The outer court.
The outer court for everybody else, remember? See, look at your thing. This right here was for everybody. Remember this? This was for everybody. And then this inside was for the priest. And then this here was for the high priest. So they had layers.
So if you're a Levite, you can go and make a sacrifice for yourself.
Well, you make them for yourself, and then once you atone for your own sins, then you can atone for the sins of the people.
So not every Levite was a priest?
No, they did a rotation. Right, so you get called up on duty. March, your family might have March. And then another one would have April. And then another one would have May. And you rotated through a duty. And when that was your turn, you lived in there. You worked in there. That's all you did.
How was that the high priest, how were they picked?
How were they selected? That's a great question. I'll do some research and come back with you. I think it was through the descendants of Aaron. Yep. So, now Jesus is saying, There's no temple. There's no wall. Jesus is tabernacling among them. In fact, what did the Pharisees accuse Jesus of doing too much of?
Blasphemy.
Yeah, but no, too much. He was he hung around with the sinners. He partied with these, you know, reputes. I mean, Samaritans and Gentiles and, yeah, publicans and, what are you doing? This is a transition. So back here, I'm going over here to remind you, like, this is the Exodus days. God is making a big deal of the priest's garments because his son is the ultimate high priest. And God's making a big deal of the tabernacle because there's a tabernacle in heaven and his son's going to tabernacle among the people. And so all of these details that we're going through on your chart here are all in preparation for a future time in which God is going to fulfill all of this through Christ. All right, let's go back to Exodus. Okay, so the last thing we talked about was chapter 28. And in chapter 28 are all the details of the high priest's garment. All the details of the high priest's garments. Chapter 29 is the consecration of the priest. The consecrations of the priest. That's how do we get a priest ready in order to do these duties. Now, this is what you shall do to them to consecrate them. All right, consecrate, to set them aside, to prepare them, that they may serve me as priests. Take one bull of the herd and two rams without blemish, unleavened bread, unleavened cakes. What's leaven, Cole? What's leaven? Right, but what's it represent?
Sin.
Right, so they're eating unleavened bread, unleavened cakes, mixed with oil, wafers smeared with oil, and you shall make them a fine wheat. You shall put them on one basket. Look at all these details. What does this do? This makes Israel different from everybody else. Why is it, Danny, why is it important that Israel is different from everybody else? Because they're God's people. That's right. They need to be different. They're supposed to look different. They're supposed to talk different. They've got different rituals than everybody else. For example, what did they do every seventh day that no one else did?
Nothing. No work.
They rested. They did nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
They rested. In fact, it was so serious that the meal was prepared the day before. Everything was done in great detail. All right, chapter 30. We have an altar of incense. An altar of incense. You're going to make an altar to burn incense, and you shall make it of acacia wood, and a cubit shall its length, cubits its width. It's going to be a square. It's going to have a height. It's going to have horns on the corners. And again, all the detail. Then it talks about in verse 11 a tax that will be taken. When you take the census of the people of Israel, then each shall give a ransom for his life to the Lord when you number them, and there will be no plague among you when you number them. And again, particular details. Verse 17, a bronze basin. Verse 22, oil and incense. Now, let's go to 32. Now we get to the great story of 32. So all of this detail is being communicated to Moses. Where's Moses? Where's he at right now? Receiving all this. Where's he at, Cole? Receiving all this.
Mount Sinai?
Right, he's up on Mount Sinai. Everyone else is down on the bottom. Before this, God was communicating to everybody. And what did they say? What did they say when they heard God's voice?
They said, you can talk to them.
They didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, Moses, you go talk. So now we're doing that. Moses went up and he's getting all this instruction and they're down at the base. Now let's figure out what are they doing down here. Chapter 32. Go ahead, Mr. Norton, nice and loud, please.
Verse 1.
Yes.
And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mountain, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we what not, what has become of him? And Aaron said unto him, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears, and brought them unto Aaron. And he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool. After he made it a molten calf. And they said, "This be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." And they rose up early in the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go, get thee down, for thy people which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, said, 'These be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.' And the Lord said unto Moses, 'I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore let me alone, and my wrath may wax hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation.'"
Alright, stop. So, let's get set in your mind how everything's going down. Make sure we're tracking. Alright, let me get my marker here. We'll go to the board. Alright, Exodus 20. A voice comes down from heaven, that's my little cloud, and speaks to them the Ten Commandments. And their response is, no more talking. You, Moses, you go up to Mount Sinai. Here's little Moses, he's up in Mount Sinai. And what's he getting from God?
More instructions.
Right, everyone says the Ten Commandments, but remember, they heard the Ten Commandments. That was Exodus 20. They got the Ten Commandments. Did they want God to keep speaking to them?
No.
Okay, they got the Ten Commandments, all right? And their response was, oh, stop, you go up there. So here they are, all the 2 million people down here at the bottom of the hill, and Moses is up here by himself at Mount Sinai. What year is it? Okay, Perry, what year? Right, 1446 B.C. Evidently, Moses is gone for a little while, isn't he?
Yep.
He ain't sending no text messages. He hasn't posted on his Facebook in a while. So they don't have any idea what's going on with Moses. So what do they say to Aaron?
They say, make us another god.
Make us a god?
Out of our earrings.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it? Remember, Moses is getting all this time right now. He's getting all the details that we just read. There's no tabernacle. It hasn't been made yet. There's no high priest yet that's been wearing this garb. Nothing's been made. All that we've been reading so far are the instructions. That's all we've been reading. We still have to make all this stuff. Look at the last verse in chapter 31. The last verse. Sal, would you read verse 18, please, on chapter 31?
"And he gave unto Moses, we have made an end of communing with him upon Mount Sinai, 2 tables of testimony, tables of stone, written with the finger of God."
Okay, that is a very important verse. Make sure you underline that verse. At the end of the conversation, they've been going back and forth, communicating. God gives Moses 2 tablets of testimony, tables of stone, written with the what?
Finger of God.
The finger of God. Now, does God have fingers?
I don't know. He has hands.
He puts his hands over.
Okay, God is a spirit. Okay, what?
He could have put the thought in Moses.
The thought in Moses, but that's not what it says, right? What's it say?
Inception.
Why is the author using that unique word, the finger of God?
Because it came from God himself.
Yeah, what a great way of communicating that. God does not have fingers. Okay, this is a method of, just like, turn your ear to me. All right, God doesn't have ears. So when the description is, turn your ear to me, what is that really saying?
Listen.
Right, it's listen. It's not turn. It's a way of describing it. So the finger of God is a way of describing these testimonies, the tablets that he has. They're written on both sides, and there's 2 of them. They start down here, find Aaron, We don't know what happened to Moses. We ain't heard from God in a while. We need a God. Everybody's got a God. Give us a God. So what's Aaron say? Break off the earrings that are in your noses, and we're going to make ourselves a God. And so a golden calf is formed. What's that?
It's a lot of earrings.
It's a lot of earrings.
Nose earrings.
Nose earrings. That's right. Nose earrings. Jimmy.
Do you think they really believe that? Because they just heard God talk to them.
Like, yeah. Isn't it mind-boggling? Right. So
Israelites, you know.
How do they go so fast? Jimmy. Sorry. Kyrie, what's up?
Gold, one, is not very easy to find, and they seem to have, like, an abundance of it. They're, like, making tents and stuff out of it.
Right, but where do they get this stuff from?
Egypt.
Oh, I see. Remember?
I remember now.
They plundered the people beyond measure, and Egypt was a wealthy nation, and they plundered the people. All right, so God says, you can't believe what they're doing down there. Go down there and tell them what?
Oh,
no, not to stop.
Wrath.
I'm done. I'm done with them. What's God going to do at this point? He's going to kill him and do what?
Start over
with whom?
Moses.
With Moses. That's right. Moses will be the new Abraham. We'll start all over. I'm done. I'm going to wipe them off the face of the planet. I am finished with them. Why does God respond this way? Why isn't he more patient?
He just took them out of slavery.
It's not the first time. They just did what?
He just took them out of slavery. And they're only worshiping gold.
It wasn't 25 years ago that the walls were parted in the Red Sea. It was like last week. It was just the other day. I mean, you just heard a voice from heaven speaking. And you said, yeah, I don't want you to talk anymore. Give me Moses. And you can't wait that long? So, verse 11. But Moses implored the Lord in his God and said, O God, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say? And what will they say? What will the Egyptians say? What will the Egyptians say if you do this, God? You don't need to keep reading it. What will the Egyptians say? Because they'll find out about it. You can't lose 2 million people in a desert and not find out about it. Israel is utterly destroyed as a nation. What will the Egyptians say?
What was your point?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. What is the point? You jerked them out of us. You took them through a Red Sea. You destroyed us only to bring them out in the wilderness and kill them? What kind of God would do that? So Moses is talking to God like this about this. Verse 13. Who does he go to?
Abraham.
Goes to Abraham. He goes to Isaac. He goes to Jacob. Why? Why does he go there? Tell me, why does Moses go to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob? Because they were faithful. Is that why God goes there? Dylan.
He was referring back.
Because they were patriarchs. Why does God go there? Why does Moses go there? Exactly. Say it louder. Say it like you're crashing the boards. The covenant. What was the covenant, Nate?
The covenant was...
What is a covenant?
Promise.
A promise. All right. What was the covenant?
Descendants.
So how in the world are you going to have descendants, God, if you wipe them all out? How's that going to work out? How's that going to work? You made a promise to who?
Abraham, Isaac.
And then you made a promise to
Isaac.
And then you made a promise to
Jacob.
What are you going to renege? What is Moses doing right now?
He's pleading.
He's pleading. He's interceding. He's questioning. He's acting as a what?
Middle priest.
A mediator, an intercessor, a priest. He's a go between right now. He's a go between the voice that's going to destroy them and the people who need to be destroyed. All of this is a picture of what?
Christ.
Christ. It's all a picture of Christ. Paul will go on later to write that there's one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. One mediator. And this is just a beautiful picture of that. In verse number 15, then Moses turned and went down from the mountain with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand. Everyone looking at verse 15 with me.
16. The tablets were the work of God. The tablets were the work of God. The writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. Then Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted. He said to Moses, "There is a noise of war in the camp." But he said, "It is not the sound of shouting for victory or the sound of cry of meat, but the sound of singing that I hear." And as soon as he came near the camp, he saw the calf and dancing, and Moses' anger was burned hot, and he threw the tablets out of his hands. He threw the tablets that God gave him? These were the work of whom?
God.
The finger of God wrote them? And you're going to do what?
Throw them.
How exasperated do you have to be?
I wouldn't throw my iPad.
He's over the top. He cannot believe what he's seeing. Verse 21. Let me back up. He saw the calf. He saw the dancing. Now, what else do you think is going on here, by the way, as we've got men and women dancing around a calf? Do you think there might be any other little kind of overtones of other behavior going on? You have men and women dancing together around a calf. He took the calf that he made and he burned it with fire and ground it to fire and scattered it on water and made the people of Israel drink it. I wonder how that would taste. And Moses said unto Aaron, now he's going to find Aaron, he's going to rip his throat out. "What did this people do that you have brought such great sin upon them?" And Aaron said, "Hey, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know this people, they are bent towards evil. For they said to me, 'Make us gods who shall go before us.' As for this Moses, the man that brought us out of the land of Egypt, we know not what has become of him. So I said, 'Let not any who have taken gold take it off.' And they gave it to me. I threw it in the fire, and out came this calf."
Perfectly formed, perfectly sculpted calf.
You love it, man. Aaron's passing the buck. Don't you blame this on me. All I did was gather some gold, do it in a fire, and suddenly there was a calf.
The worst I could say.
And when Moses saw the people had broken loose, for Aaron had let them break loose, to the derision of their enemies, then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, "Who is on the Lord's side? Come to me." And all the sons of Levi gathered around him, and he said unto them, "Thus says the Lord God, put your sword on your side and go to forth again." And they just literally go through killing. This is mind-boggling. If you're on the Lord's side, come here. So the Levites show up, and he says, "Go slaughter people." And the Levites just go in and commence to cutting heads off. We're dismissed.
They're alive.